This is the test, this tape, to see if it works real well. Trying to see if this tape will work all right and pick up sounds. I'm at the home of Benny Higgins in Greensboro, North Carolina. The date is 12/28, isn't it? Mm. Yeah. 1990. And I'd like for you to tell that you know your name and tell them that you know this is being recorded.
This is Benny Higgins, and I'm well aware of the fact that this is being recorded.
All right, Benny, the research that I'm doing, I'm going to compare the roles, perceptions of black high school principals that were principals in 1964 with principals who were principals in 1989. I know now you're not in the principal's role, but you served as a principal in 1989. So I'd like for you to tell me how you became a high school principal.
Okay, I started off as a teacher at Dudley High School in 1965. I taught biology for 4 years and became dean of boys. That was a position that many schools in this area, at least large schools in this area, had because they did not have additional assistant principals, so the dean of boys position. I held that for 2 years, left Dudley High School and went to Proximity School. It was a school grades 4 through 9 as assistant principal for 1 year. That school was closed after that first year that I was there, and then I went to Mendenhall Junior High School, served there as assistant principal for 1 year, and then was transferred to Smith High School as an assistant principal. I was an assistant there for 3 years and became principal in 1976.
Mm-hmm. And from that time until?
And until recently, August 1st, I became director of secondary education for the Greensboro Schools.
Same. Tell me something about Smith High School and the responsibilities you had at Smith. And there are several things that I'm going to ask you to address, but just tell me something about the makeup of the school, the population, and...
Okay, the school had a student population of just over 1,300 students. We had approximately 92 staff members, professional staff members. And Smith High School, I used to refer to it as the All-American School because it had a broad array of students from many backgrounds. We didn't have students, large numbers from any one socioeconomic background. We had approximately 48% black, 47% white, and about 5% Asian. Our school served as the site for the ESL program for high school students, and English as second language students from all over the city attended Smith. I think that the makeup of our school, I refer to it as an all-American school because the students we had, some students from what you might call upper middle class, middle class, low middle class, and low economic students. So we had a great variety, and I felt that it was a comfortable situation for most of our students, and the students generally got along very well, black, white, and the Asians. We had a large number of our former faculty members who are now working in the central office, and I used to take great pride in the fact that the makeup of the school and the way the students and teachers related to each other had something to do with many of the folks who received promotions at Smith.
All right, would you tell me about the supervision of personnel and how your teachers were selected?
Okay. I had three assistant principals, and usually I would involve at least one of the assistant principals in the initial round of interviewing prospective teachers. And we had to interview a minimum of three people. And from that number of persons that we interviewed, we usually selected two people that I would call back for a second interview by myself, and from there would usually make the selection. I tried to do it in such a way that either of the two, that we would feel happy with either of the two. But since I had the primary responsibility for them, I wanted it to be primarily my decision of who was selected. But whenever possible, I would involve an assistant principal, and also usually I would involve a department chairman, because I sometimes felt, this is something that I heard from an old principal one time, he always advised me and told me that he liked to involve someone in the interview process that the person perhaps knew had might have had influence but didn't have the final decision, and sometimes that person might have been more open with them than they would have with me. So in most cases, and most of our hiring was done during the summer, and if the department chairman were available, I would also try to involve them in at least meeting the people. It wasn't a formal interview, but it was simply to let the department chairman acquaint the person with the curriculum and the setup of the school, the classrooms, and that sort of thing. It was sort of just a, I might refer to it as a social interview.
Well, then after you made your selection of the one of the two, then did you have to?
Okay, then I had to make a recommendation to the assistant superintendent for personnel, but before it went to that person, it had to go before Linda McDougal, who was the I can't think of Linda's title at the time. She was an administrative assistant, and she was responsible for maintaining racial ratios. What's the term I'm looking for? I'm on tape and I can't think straight.
Oh, that's all right. I remember she had a title, and she was responsible for, was it affirmative action officer.
So Linda really would make a check on that before it went to the assistant superintendent for personnel, and once she approved it, then it went to the assistant superintendent for personnel, and generally it was a formality. But I think the Linda's check was just as important, or perhaps more important, than the assistant superintendent. So in a sense, principals had total say-so in who was hired, because I never had a person that I recommended for employment to be turned down, so it was more or less a formality. This year, however, the assistant superintendent, we have a new assistant superintendent for personnel, and he is getting more involved, not from the standpoint of interviewing the persons, but as far as checking their credentials and their application, he really gets involved in that now. And already I know of two teachers who've been turned down since he has been in the situation. And I'm not directly involved with the employment of teachers, but in these particular cases, as Director of Secondary Education, he informed me about the situations and made me aware of the reasons he turned them down, so that as I deal with principals in the future, I can let them know that he's going to be very particular about who's employed in Greensboro now.
I see. What about curriculum and instruction?
Okay, our assistant principals were divided, had responsibilities. I had one assistant principal whose title was assistant for curriculum and instruction, one for administration, and one for student affairs. And I usually met with the department chairman twice a month. She met with them once a week, and I would usually meet with them about twice a month with our department chairman's meetings. I also served on the curriculum forum, which is a group of administrators and teachers throughout the city who examined new course offerings and also made recommendations for the elimination and changes for various courses. So I was involved in curriculum and tried to be as knowledgeable as I could so that I would know that the teachers, as I visited classes and talked with teachers, that they were, you know, teaching the curriculum as prescribed by the school system. That is a big job, and the assistant principals were involved in that too, because of the way we had teachers divided up for evaluation purposes. But perhaps you're going to ask about that now.
Well, did you have any input in the design of the curriculum for your particular school, or does every high school in Greensboro have the same curriculum?
Every school has the same curriculum, and there are some differences. There are some courses that are unique to to some schools, but basically we have the same curriculum. Every school has the opportunity to offer the same courses, but some courses are more popular at some schools than they are at others. Consequently, they don't make, but there are some schools that the teachers themselves had made recommendations for new course offerings, and obviously those courses would receive a greater push at particular schools, and I think that's what accounted for that.
And you can go on and talk about the evaluation of teachers.
Okay, we had our teachers divided up into four groups for each of the four administrators. I was involved with all teachers. I evaluated all teachers who were in their tenure year. ICPs, however, my assistant principals, if they happened to have the department that an ICP teacher was in that year, they would evaluate them. But if a teacher was reaching tenure, then I had to evaluate. Well, when I say I had to, that was a decision that I made. Mm-hmm. Because I would have to make the recommendation that that person receive tenure. And for a time, we had to present individual teachers to the school board before tenure was granted. And it was somewhat awkward to go into one of those meetings and make a recommendation, and then they might ask you specific questions, and if you hadn't been involved in the evaluation, mm-hmm. would put you in an embarrassing situation. So every teacher who received tenure, the year of tenure, I would do their evaluation.
Discipline.
Discipline was, it was a shared responsibility with the four of us, but the assistant principal for administration and the one for student affairs had primary responsibilities. The third assistant principal and I, we were involved, but not as involved as those two. But once again, teachers were assigned to us by departments, the same departments that we had for evaluation purposes. Those teachers, when they had discipline problems, would refer the student to their evaluator. But as you know, that person may not always be available. And then a lot of times, because of other responsibilities I had, I might even be available, but the two assistants that I mentioned earlier would usually get involved. So while I was involved in discipline, I have to say that I was not as deeply involved as a principal as I was as an assistant principal.
Well, would you say that, I know that your school did have a high minority population. Right. Do you think discipline was your major problem? Did you see it?
I really didn't see discipline as a big problem. You know, you read and hear so much about discipline being a problem in schools in America today. Our biggest problem really was attendance, which fell in the area of discipline. But as far as problems that were existent between students and students and students and teachers, except for the routine kinds of things that you would expect in a large urban high school. But I didn't really feel that it was a major problem. But I did feel that attendance was a major problem. But because students today, for some reason, don't feel that they have to or ought to be in school every day. Many of them are looking for jobs, and many of our kids at Smith had after-school jobs. And in some cases, their employers would even call us and ask us to excuse them from school so that they could work if someone were sick, and they would want one of their part-time workers to come in early. And that just really upset me. And of course, the fact that students were easily influenced to do that, because the prospect of making money for a 17-year-old is much greater than the need for an education. At least they can't realize that until they're out of school.
Transportation.
All right, transportation in Greensboro has gotten much better, at least for the administration, because transportation to a large degree is handled from our central office. Director of Transportation, his assistant, and then he has a number of lead drivers that they have full responsibility. At one time, one of the assistant principals at the high school was responsible for the transportation and supervision of the bus drivers, but that's no longer true in Greensboro. Each high school has a lead bus driver assigned to it, and that lead driver is responsible for supervising the drivers. So except for just passing on concerns and complaints that we might receive, we really were not involved with the transportation system as we used to be.
Very good. What about cafeteria management?
The same thing. The cafeteria manager, we tried to give her great support as far as supervision of the students, but as far as supervision of her staff, she was in charge of that. I had the supervision of the manager herself and also technically her staff, but she did the evaluation for her employees. I did her evaluation and we supervised the students in the cafeteria, but as far as staff was concerned, the cafeteria manager was fully responsible for that.
Mm-hmm. Building and grounds.
Building and grounds. That is a real problem because of the low wages that we pay to our custodians and our maintenance workers. There's quite a bit of turnover in some schools, but I was very fortunate at Smith. During the time that I was there, off the top of my head, I can't say how many people we changed, but the bulk of our employees were there when I started as principal and were there when I left. Smith was a unique situation. It was our newest high school. It was fully air conditioned, and consequently we were called upon to host a lot of outside activities as well as the many activities that we had in our school. We were close to Interstate 40 and 85, and a lot of times when groups were meeting in the city of Greensboro, they would always request Smith because of its close proximity to Four Seasons Mall and hotels. And so we were constantly hosting outside groups. And our custodial staff, I was always real proud of them because they took a lot of pride in hosting these groups. And the comments, although they didn't receive any money for it, they were very proud of the fact that people always wanted to come back, and the hospitality, the custodial staff was always cited for the way they took care of people. So that was a little feather in our cap, I felt.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the relationship is between Smith High School and the community?
That's a funny relationship in that Greensboro, while it's rather large city, it's still small town in a lot of respects, and students who attended Smith, many of them, if their parents were natives of Greensboro, their parents attended Dudley and Grimsley primarily, and to some degree Page. So the last couple of years that I was at Smith, I was finally starting to get students whose parents attended Smith. And that made, sort of changed the relationship that the school had with the community. Because many parents who had attended the other high schools had a strong loyalty, mm-hmm. and kind of felt that Smith was not their school, because they would always refer to Dudley and Grimsley, and as I said, to some degree to Page. So that was starting to change because we're now getting the children of parents who had attended Smith. But when I first went there, that was a real problem. Smith was sort of looked upon by the native parents as a stepchild. They didn't want their children to go there. They wanted their children to go to their high school, mm-hmm. and Smith was not their high school.
How much administrative power or control did you think you had over your school site and your responsibilities?
Well, I thought that I had as much as perhaps a principal could have. That is definitely the emphasis of Dr. Everhart, our superintendent, who's been here about 4.5 years now. He is really big on site-based management. It's really received quite a bit of emphasis. As a matter of fact, just 2 weeks ago, we had a workshop for our principals on site-based management with the Senate Bill 2 money. Of course, that has received a great emphasis from the state and he personally, not just because the state pushes site-based management, but it's a personal philosophy of his. In addition to that, Dr. Newbold, who preceded Dr. Everhart, used to say that he wanted principals to have autonomy, but Dr. Newbold was a general, a former Army man and a general in the National Guard, and I kind of felt that he didn't really believe in what he said. He liked to run things himself, but at least he said that. So I really felt that I did have a lot of autonomy. The central office made me responsible for those things that went wrong, and I think gave me credit for the things that went right. So I really felt quite autonomous.
Could you tell me about the utilization of funds? I go back and missed one. Utilization of funds.
Okay. Once again, that was a decision that was made technically by the principal, but any wise principal, I think, will involve staff in the way funds were distributed. With our instructional budget as an example, we allotted money to departments based on enrollment. That created some trouble. So I would always keep some money off the top so that some of the small departments, especially fine arts, would be given money in addition to the ratio that they receive money based on the number of students. I also had some money held in reserve for them because they couldn't possibly buy the things that they needed based on the enrollment in their classes. But our money was basically the determination of how the money would be spent would be made by the departments. Once we assigned the money to the departments, then we gave them sort of a free rein in how they spent it. With capital outlay money, the amount that we received was small, and we had to send in our recommendations for capital outlay projects in the spring, and once that money was allocated in the fall, then it had to be spent for what you indicated the previous spring that you were going to spend it for. But once again, that amount was really small because the bulk of the capital outlay money was kept for major projects for the school system. But we usually, I think, had around $7,000-$8,000 that we could spend. Mm-hmm. Custodial allocations, of course, we had that totally, and the head custodian along with my assistant principal for administration made decisions about that. And I tried to give the assistant principals as much autonomy as I could give them too, because I wanted them to have the experience, hopefully, when they became principals, of having some say-so and knowledge about various budgets and the full operation of the school, which is another thing that I've been somewhat proud about, because I had quite a few of my former assistant principals who are now principals today, so that was a source of pride also.
So you consider yourself a mentor when it comes.
Yeah.
Because some principals don't give the assistant principals a chance to, they work in one area so long, and then when they go for an interview, they have no knowledge of the other.
Well, I was fortunate in that the principals that I worked for gave me a lot of autonomy. In fact, Mr. Brown, who was the principal of Dudley High School, where I started my teaching career, who hired me for my first job, made me dean of boys, and directed me and told me what to do to become prepared to be an administrator, which, you know, he guided me into some things, and I didn't even really realize what he was doing to prepare me to become an administrator, because I was young and naive and would have been content to stay there with him forever. Mm-hmm. But little did I know, a lot of the things that he was giving me the freedom to do and sending me to meetings and workshops and things, preparing me to become a principal, and like I said, I didn't really even realize mm-hmm. what he was doing for me at the time.
How do you think desegregation of schools affected your role as a principal?
Well, desegregation of schools probably made it easier for me to become a principal, because
when I first started in Greensboro, the schools were segregated and the number of opportunities were limited. So the fact that the schools integrated gave me a greater opportunity to get into administration quicker than I probably would have. There were some bad times and some bad experiences, and some parents of the majority race who resented a black being in an authority position. But over the years, they, in Greensboro especially, I think, came to accept that. And while some of them still might not like it, they did come to accept it.
Hey, how you doing, Jay?
And
very nice.
And consequently, overall, I don't really feel that great an impact as far as desegregation on my career. I do realize, like I said, the fact that it happened for me quicker, probably because of desegregation. But I don't feel that desegregation itself affected my performance or my ability to move and to perform in the school system. I came out of school at the just right time. And like I said, Greensboro is a unique community, strange in some ways, but in one respect, blacks in the school system have had pretty prominent positions and have been able to move, and I don't feel have been hampered as a result of desegregation.
Do you consider yourself a community leader?
Well, not like principals of old. Mm-hmm. Greensboro has grown so. When I was a student here in Greensboro myself, the principals definitely were community leaders. But as Greensboro has grown and blacks have become more prominent in other professions, the principal does not have the, I started to say respect, and respect is not the right, the prominence, I'd say, that principals once had. But still, to some degree, we are looked upon by a lot of people as being community leaders. So to some degree, yes, but certainly not as much as they used to be, principals mm-hmm. used to be.
Did you enjoy your job, and if so, why?
I did enjoy it. It was frustrating, and there was more to be frustrated about, perhaps, than the enjoyment, but I enjoyed seeing our former students do well. I think I had a lot of influence on students, although I don't think the students recognized it. I tried to do some things for students that had been done for me, because I had a real good experience as I grew up in Greensboro and wanted to be a teacher from an early age because of the influence of my former teachers. And I have a unique situation even today in that some of my junior high teachers, my wife worked at the junior high school that I attended when it was segregated. And that group of teachers, they still meet twice a year because my wife worked there. She's a part of that old faculty. And because I went to school there and the spouses are invited, I'm invited. So I get to see many of those teachers who are now retired. Mm-hmm. And hope that I have had the influence on students that I've dealt with that they've had on me, because I had a great deal of respect for them then and still now. Mm-hmm. And just think that they were just great people. And it feels good to me to have students come back and say that something that I did help them in some way. So that was the greatest satisfaction, mm-hmm. I guess. And it doesn't always happen a lot. I think that even because I'm guilty of it too, of really telling someone who meant a lot to you how much they meant to you. And so I know that perhaps there are a lot of students who have not said that, but then when one does say that to you, it really makes you feel good.
What do you consider the major problem of your principalship?
Oh, the major problem of my principalship. That is a good one. the major problem, I guess, is to have a staff as large as we had at Smith and to have all teachers to feel about the school the way I felt about it. My family probably suffered as a result of the time and effort that I put into the school. And I expected everybody else to do the same thing. And some people, quite frankly, looked at teaching as a job. And it is a job, and it shouldn't be a person's whole life, but I couldn't understand why some of our staff members were not more involved in the school than just the five classes they taught. Because I think that in order to really be effective with students, they have to see you in more than just one role. They have to feel and see that you really care about them. And as I look at the staff, I think we had more people who really cared and put their all into the job than didn't. But I felt that we could have been more effective if everybody had really given it 100% rather than coming in, taking the position that, you know, I'm going to teach the class and it's up mm-hmm. to you to learn. Mm-hmm. And I think to really influence. Some of our folks didn't feel that that was necessary, and I did, and that was a real frustration for me. Another frustration, I guess, was that many parents were not more involved with the school. Their attitude was, you know, my child is at high school age now, and it's time that he start being more independent. And I always felt that the support that parents gave kids at the elementary school should have been transferred to the high school. Because I always felt that elementary kids are eager to learn and to do exactly what the teachers and authority figures tell them to do. And the students needed more guidance as high school students than they did at elementary school. And all of the parent support goes to the elementary child, and once they reach high school, it's kind of thank goodness and now you're on your own. And I thought that was a big mistake on the part of many parents.
Did you have any way to weed your mediocre teachers?
Now, that was another frustrating thing too. Perhaps it was my weakness or failure on my part as principal. My desire was always sincerely to try to help a teacher improve. And that was a real battle because a lot of teachers felt that if they admitted that they had deficiencies, the principal was viewed as the enemy. And I never looked at myself that way. But it was hard to convince teachers that I was sincere, that when I talked to them about improving things, the first thing that they thought about was that, well, this is the beginning of him trying to get rid of me. And my sincere effort was to try to improve, because over the course of the years, I only had one or two teachers that I really thought should have been out of the profession. There were some that I thought could just change the way they were doing things to become better teachers, but that was misread a lot of times. So that was a constant fight. And then there were, like I said, there were one or two that I felt should have been out of the profession altogether, perhaps should have been dismissed, and fortunately they left the Greensboro system. But I didn't feel good about that, because in most cases they still went to another school system. And I felt that, you know, I didn't do my job, so to speak, that they should have been gotten rid of.
What do you consider most rewarding about your principalship?
Once again, going back to something I said earlier, the relationships with students and parents and teachers, the feeling of being a team, the feeling of having some influence on the success that students had. There were some students and some teachers and parents who relied on the advice that I would give them and would seek that out, and that had to be, the relationships had to be the most rewarding thing, mm-hmm. I think.
Well, the two groups that I'm interviewing, the 1964 group, at that time there were over 200 black high school principals.
Is that right?
In 1964. And last year when I sent to the State Department to find the number of and the names of the black high school principals in 89, there were 41 on the list, but some of them are of alternative schools. Mm-hmm. So that means it's less than 40
right.
that have graduating classes and high school principals. If you had to give some advice to a black person, a young person that was aspiring to be an administrator of a high school in North Carolina, what kind of advice would you give that person?
Well, I would say, first of all, they ought to get involved in all facets of the school. They ought to learn as much about the school as they possibly can as a teacher, which there's a real shortage of men, black and white, and an even greater shortage of black men. There was an article in our local paper last week about the shortage of black teachers generally. So black administrators and black teachers are truly needed today. I would say get to learn as much about the school as you possibly can as a teacher. Volunteer for as many things. Get yourself involved in as many committees in the school as possible. Get yourself involved in every facet of the school. I want to say it's easy, and in a way it is easy for a black male to get into administration because there are so many school systems who are looking. So the thing that I'd say to black young blacks is to learn as much as you possibly can so that when the call comes, you're going to be ready. And one of the worst things that could happen is for a black to get the opportunity, not only a black, but we're talking about black administrators, but to have the opportunity and not have the background and experience. And then not only are you going to hurt yourself, but you're going to hurt future black administrators, even the ones who are really competent, if you aren't ready. And let's face it, the way our society is, we're looked upon that they don't expect us to be able to be competent and to be successful. And because the opportunities are out there for black men, if a black man who's in education and he wants to get into administration, if he prepares for it, it's going to be relatively easy, I think, for him to move to the top.
What are some of the skills that you think are absolutely necessary?
Some of the skills, verbal skills, people skills, a person who is able to make fast decisions, to judge situations and be fair, a person who is competent and is viewed as competent by students and teachers, who a person who presents himself well. He doesn't have to be a fashion plate, but the dress of our teachers today is not what it used to be, and I think that first image, before a person says anything, the way he looks is going to be very important. And then once he passes that test, he has to present himself well verbally and has to have something to say and not just saying something for the sake of saying it. So,
well, any other words of wisdom?
Well, we're on the firing line, so to speak, and I think for black children, you're going to be black administrators in a tough situation because you're going to be seen by many black kids as a part of the system, and some black kids assume, make an assumption that because you are in an administrative position, and even as a teacher, that you're a part of the system and that the system opposes black kids. And there have been so many things that have happened in our society to make black parents think that that's true and to know that it's true. But we need black teachers and we need black administrators to influence our black students so that they don't throw their lives away, because I see so many black kids rebelling against the system that they don't really realize that they are playing into the hands of those who say that blacks cannot, will not be successful. And I see so many young black kids just playing right into the hands. So we need some black teachers and black administrators to try to turn them around. And that is a tough job, as I said, because you, because of your position, you're going to be viewed as the enemy, so to speak. And that is a really, really tough job. But I think once you get in there and that they see that you are sincere and they see that you can help them, that you will help them, that'll turn around. But there are not enough of us, I don't think. So we got to get some more blacks, and that's getting harder and harder to do.
Oh, it is. It really is. I've enjoyed this interview.
Well, thank you.
We sat across the table many days at Hampton.
Oh yeah.
So this is refreshing, you know. Yeah. After years of letting our lives do the singing.
Yeah, it's been very interesting to think back to those days and to think about what I'm doing now and what old friends are doing now. It's life is I'm looking for a long life, but things happen so quickly.
Yes,
I can't believe it.
Yes, they do. They really do. But I really thank you for sharing with.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to see
quite
you.
Quite impressive. Very good.
Okay, I'll just start over with one of the problems that I see for us, and one thing that concerns me for black children and black educators is it's an attitude that some of our black teachers have in a desegregated situation, a feeling that principals, and especially black principals, will cater to white teachers at their expense. And it has been difficult for me to get our black teachers involved in some things that they ought to be in, leadership roles that they ought to be involved in for the benefit of our students, to get them to serve as advisors for clubs and organizations, to take the leadership for things like American Education Week, to be in positions where they can influence the number and the involvement of black kids in extracurricular activities, which to me are just as important as a formal education, because students get an opportunity to experience leadership opportunities that will augment what they get in the classroom. But it's difficult to get many of our black teachers to give that extra time and working with young blacks, or to work with the kids in general, and indirectly to help the black students who need that. And then there's an attitude towards black principals, and I've talked to some other blacks and they felt this too, a feeling that the black teachers feel that black principals cater to white teachers. But it's a matter of, if you're trying to do something, it's better to have people who volunteer to do something than to make a person do something. And as a principal, sometimes you can direct a person to take a responsibility, but if they don't have their heart in it, it's not going to be successful. And I would much rather have teachers who volunteer to do something. But then when you call for volunteers, the volunteers are generally white. And then the black teachers feel that, well, you let them do everything. Well, it's not a matter of letting them do anything. It's a matter of they volunteered to do it. Mm-hmm. And my feeling is, once again, that it's better to have a person to volunteer to do something, and you only resort to appointing people when you can't get people who genuinely want to do something.
Did you notice a pattern where there was a black teacher in charge of a club or an advisor for a club that you had more black participation?
That a pattern? You had more black participation, but But you see, I was, my feeling was, even when I had black and white teachers, if it's a white advisor, you're going to have more white kids to gravitate. If it's a black advisor, you're going to have more blacks. But I would insist as much as I could that we have equal participation on the part of black and white kids. And some of our black teachers, if they were in charge of something, they would stack it with blacks because they said that's what white teachers were doing. And I was trying to get both sides to not do that. I thought that it was important for the student body that every organization in the school, as much as you can without being totally artificial, to try to get black, white, and Asian kids to participate. As a result of that, my last year at Smith, I started, because I saw the need for it again, I started the old human relations committee that we had years ago when integration first started. And while I opened it to all students, I went around and I spoke to black, white, and Asian kids because I was going to ensure that I had a broad spectrum of students. And the funny thing, when the other students saw this, then kids would volunteer. The Asian kids would feel comfortable coming because they knew there were Asian kids, and the black kids felt comfortable. And as a result, I got some good participation, but for some reason, it was hard to get our teachers, some black and white, to see that they did not feel that they needed to make that special effort. And I always did. I felt that I used to say that you got to guarantee success, and you guarantee success by doing some little behind the scene things to make sure that whatever you're trying to do is successful. And let's face it, we've been integrated here in Greensboro 20 years. But our students still come from homes, and they come largely from neighborhoods that are still segregated. So if we don't do things in the school to let the kids see that it's all right to be involved with black kids outside the classroom, and it's all right to be involved with white kids outside the classroom, we have to model that. And the same thing in the cafeteria. It used to bother me to go to the cafeteria and look at one end of the teacher table. All the teachers would congregate. One end would be white, one end would be black. And I talk about that in faculty meeting, that, you know, I can't make you all be friends, but I think we need to model some things for our kids. How can we ask the kids to get along, black and white, when they can look at us and while they don't see us fighting, they can see that something isn't quite right. Mm-hmm. And those kinds of things, I think, are important. But there are a lot of teachers, black and white, who don't feel that that's their responsibility. And I do feel it's their responsibility. I think, you know, using a seating chart in a classroom. One reason I think that teachers used to use seating charts is to separate the bad eggs. But I like to use seating charts because I want to integrate the classroom. I don't like to walk into a classroom and see the black kids sitting on one side and the white kids sitting on another side. And once again, people, you know, this is America, people are free to sit where they want to sit. And that's true, but once again, I think that the school system is the place that this country is going to be changed. And if we don't have the right people in the leadership and positions in the schools, then it's going to take longer to happen. Mm-hmm. But then some kids are smarter than some of the adults. They do it on their own. But once again, you can't expect a student to come from a situation, a neighborhood that's segregated, a segregated church, segregated every phase of their life except school, and then expect them to all of a sudden integrate and have friends of the opposite race. But I think if we set up situations where they get to know each other, then I think the country is going to change.
Mm-hmm. Did you see some progress with your teachers?
Well, some black and white had the same feeling and philosophy about it that I did, and some didn't. And once again, the faculty was split in that respect. Some people that you could go in their classrooms And you know, it's funny, and maybe it's because of my belief that I'm saying this, but I thought the most effective teachers academically had the better relationships among their students. You could walk in and you could feel and you could see something in their classroom, the relationship between the teacher and the students and students and students. And I just felt more learning was taking place in that classroom. Mm-hmm. But when I walked into a classroom and I saw black kids on one side, white kids on the other side, I felt that the learning in that classroom was being affected, because if the teacher were not wise enough to see that that was not a good situation, then I don't think she would be wise enough to see and understand a child's learning deficiency and help him overcome that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's my belief. Now, whether it's true or not, I don't have anything to prove it, mm-hmm. but I believe that.
I think you're pretty sound in your belief.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.